Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here is your host, Bill Kennard.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard. This month's program is titled, Advice from a Financial Lender. Dealing with financial and lending institutions and having a line of credit is often an aspect of business ownership that a lot of owners don't look forward to. Carl Spade joins us in a conversation to outline why having a good and established relationship with your banker is important, and he discusses how to approach borrowing. In our conversation, Carl talks about what cash flow questions you should expect lenders to ask you and the records that they may be looking for. He touches on how short-term borrowing is a bridge for gaps between receivables and how, when properly used, lines of credit can keep your business running smoothly, and how using it incorrectly can land you in a mountain of debt. Carl is a UW Oshkosh Economics and Finance graduate. He started his career in community banking in 2009. Since then, he's elevated through positions in his chosen profession. He has held roles such as credit analyst, financial advisor, portfolio manager, credit manager, and credit officer. Within this time, he's assisted many businesses across multiple industries, each with unique financing needs and challenges. When not at work, Carl and his family enjoy taking full advantage of the local Wisconsin sights. Often, they spend time together, going out and relaxing on the local boating waters, or taking the day to go hiking on the trails in the state parks. And now, with advice from a financial lender, here's Carl Spay with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation. Well, hey, Carl, it's great to have you here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Hey, so our topic today is really getting into this whole idea of you know, having to borrow money or deal with a financial institution, and so many times that small business owners go into that really with their eyes not wide open. Sometimes that becomes a little bit of an issue. Now, one of the things that certainly the industry has seen, and really in all trades, is the fact that we just came through the pandemic. And quite frankly, there were so many contractors that had record years through that time period. And so they expanded, they bought trucks, they hired people, they went through all those things. And then now things are tightening up. And they have a whole set of issues with equipment availability and all the rest of that stuff. But then the economy is tightening up, and there's a lot of them that go through that cycle that don't recognize, that they need to be backing down, that they need to be downsizing a little bit, or at least preparing for the future. So that's kind of what I see from our side. In working with the trades and the contractors, do you see some of that from your side, or what does that look like on your end? How do you view that?
Absolutely. I think you take a look at kind of the national stuff where they say, okay, we're in a recession. Well, how do you know when you're in a recession? When you can look back and say, yeah, there it was. You're in it. Not when you're in it, right?
Right.
To echo what you said, you look back at kind of the past couple of years, and the biggest issue or the biggest question wasn't, where am I going to get my next job? It's, can I find enough employees? And, is the material going to be here on time? Mm-hmm. So for a lot of that, cash flow and profitability and revenue wasn't necessarily the issue that was coming in. It was all of the, are we going to have the material on site to be able to do the job, to finish the job? That was more of kind of the big thing that business owners had to look at. On my side, from the banking standpoint, we get the benefit of getting the financials after the fact. Kind of like I said, where when you're in a recession, because you can look back and you can point to it. Banks are looking at financial statements, tax returns, looking at what happened over the previous periods, and they can kind of point their finger and say, hey, you're starting to lose money here. Why didn't you make a change? Why didn't you cut staffing? Why didn't you increase your pricing to manage your cash flow? So it can be very difficult to know in the moment, that you're in that. One of the things, especially for contractors, where things are so job specific, most financial accounting programs have a jobs in progress report that you can look at and say, for each job, look at your profitability, your costing, to make sure that each job in and of itself is profitable. And you're not just looking at the end of the month, is there money in the checkbook, right? Because that can really be a key warning a lot of times on the front end of things is, okay, you know, our price is starting to go up and I need to adjust my prices, increase my prices to make up for that difference in materials, or, you know, are things just not coming in as fast as they were? So that profitability per job and looking at it, and it's as more of a kind of a job specific individual thing versus is there money in the checkbook, can be a really good warning indicator of, you know, are things starting to slow down?
Yep. So let me ask that, because, you know, that just spurs a number of different thoughts for me. So from the lender's perspective, you're saying that it would be a good thing, wise thing, for them to be doing the job costing on individual jobs. Because, yeah, and let me just preface that by saying that you know, 85% of contractors across the country still use standard QuickBooks, right? They don't even use contractor version of QuickBooks, which means they don't have that job costing piece of the puzzle in there. Does that, you know, throw red flags for you? Does it? I mean, what's the viewpoint of that?
I've yet to meet a small business owner that said, you know, I started my company so that I could produce financial reporting for the bank.
Yeah, right.
So you love the trade. That, yeah, you love the trade. You love kind of go out, meet with customers, getting the work done. And then there's the kid's soccer game or, you know, the dance recital or something like that, and family and life gets in the way. And that stack invoices that needs to get sent out, or bills that need to get paid, get put on, you know, the corner of the desk, and I'll get to that tomorrow. What we see a lot of times on the from the banking standpoint is, if you don't have, if you're not at the point where it makes sense to have a full-time bookkeeper or accountant on staff, even if you just have somebody for 10 to 15 hours a week, that's going to pay invoices, pay bills when they're due, send out invoices to make sure that you're collecting cash when you should. It helps a ton. And if you don't have that person, or you don't think you're quite to that point, if you have a really good accountant that can help you through that process, a lot of the accountants that we talk to are seeing kind of the same problems, or same issues, where, like I said, you start a business because you're really passionate about the industry and the business. Right. And then there's the number side that, you know, maybe you need some help with it.
So the, and even companies, right? Because, you know, there's certainly a lot of people who are listening today that, you know, have the full-time bookkeeper, right? But they still don't do job costing. If I had to put a number on it, Carl, I would venture to say, out of all the companies that we work with, probably easily 80 to 85% do not job cost.
How do you know you're pricing things appropriately?
Right. That's exactly right. We have to be looking at the individual job. And a lot of times, you know, as I always tell them, is the material piece of the puzzle might be static, right? So I knew that, you know, I've got $10,000 worth of materials in here. It's costing me $10,000, but what about the time, right? Because all of a sudden the time can blow away the profitability on a job pretty quickly.
Absolutely. It's, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And if you think about financial statements and the job costing is not something that you just have to do for the bank, but really is a tool for you as the business owner to manage your cash, manage your capital.
Right.
It's, you know, the bank's asking for it because the bank has a vested interest in you being around and paying your bills for the foreseeable future, right? Being successful. The bank wants you to be successful because they lend you money, they rent capital with the expectation that it's going to get paid back. They don't want to make it so onerous that you can't do your job and perform your business to a point where you're reporting all of these things and you're not able to go out there and generate profits.
Yep.
And then pay the loan back, right?
Yeah.
But so in a sense, if you have a good bank, if you have a good banking relationship, that it is that they want you to succeed and they can help coach you along the way, where it's they're asking for things, and them asking or requiring that jobs in progress report lets you know as the business owner, once you start doing that, maybe you have a couple different teams, and you know, you have one person that was promoted to lead the staff on this specific team because they've been with you the longest and they're really good at doing what they do, but they're not good at leading a team. Mm-hmm. And it, for whatever reason, it seems like every job that team is on is not as profitable as your other teams. That's valuable information to have as a business owner.
But you have to track it, right? If you can't exactly measure it, you can't manage it. So you brought up another point that I think is worth at least talking about. I have always said there are three relationships that you need to have in your business, right? There's your attorney, your CPA, and your banker, because at some point in your company's career, you will need all three of them. So, you know, what advice could you give regarding fostering or what that relationship with my banker might look like, right? Because yeah, I'm not really going to get together with coffee with my lender, you know, once a week, right? I mean, so what is that? I mean, from your perspective, what might that look like? You know, the healthy relationship with my banker.
You bring up a great point, right? It's kind of like insurance. You need it when you want to have it when you don't need it.
Right.
Because when you need it, you can't get it.
Right.
The worst time to be trying to start a banking relationship is when payroll's on Friday and it's Tuesday and you're out of cash.
Yep.
And unfortunately, I've seen it in my career more than once. So it's important to have that relationship established for someone that understands you, understands your business, knows your track record, mm-hmm. That isn't afraid when one job goes bad and maybe you had a receivable that didn't come in or job costing was wrong. Like it happens, right? It's sometimes we see when people make that jump to that next biggest job, they're awarded the big contract, but they don't quite know how to price everything because it's new and it's a whole lot bigger than they're accustomed to. And you can have hiccups there. If you have a bank that knows you and understands you, mm-hmm. it makes that conversation a whole lot easier.
Sure.
So I would say, you know, it's a little bit biased, right? Because I've spent my career in community banking. When you think of community banking, what does that mean? It means that you're seeing the bank president, you know, out at the community events. They're yep. at the village picnic. They have
you
a float
run to them at Costco and wherever
yeah,
else.
Yeah, exactly. So they got a float in the community parade. They're really, the decision makers are local so that they know you, they know who you are, they know your business, they see your trucks driving around town, they know you're doing good things. It makes it a whole lot easier than if you have somebody that's a 1-800 number away. And mm-hmm. they don't know who you are. They don't know anything about you or the community that you're in.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot harder to establish that relationship that way.
And I tend to agree with that. I mean, I've always dealt with the smaller, more community banks throughout this company's career. And you know, I just think that it's easier to have that relationship. You know, chances are the relationships that we have tend to be longer term. The people aren't moving quite as quickly. And you know, there's more and more of the large commercial banks that are just, you know, doing everything remote. And so a little bit more of a challenge there to have that personal relationship.
Agreed.
Okay. Well, I like I said, you mentioned the relationship with the banker, and I thought, well, okay, let me ask that one for your perspective. So let me talk for just a moment that, you know, about the bank's perspective on lines of credit, right? Because there's a proper use for a line of credit. Right.
There is
an improper use. And a lot of people end up using their line of credit improperly because they wander into it. Right. So what would, you know, and I'm not sure if this is your area or not, but is there a perfect line of credit from the bank's perspective?
Well, from the bank's perspective, it's one that's funded and generating interest that they don't have a risk of loss, right? That's the bank's earning asset is the loans they make.
Sure. But in reality, every loan, including a line of credit, has a risk of loss, does it not?
Banking is a risk business. That's
right.
True.
Okay.
What you like to see is regular movement in the line of credit. So a line of credit differs from what we refer to as a term loan. So a term loan, you get a lump sum up front, you amortize or you make monthly payments or regular payments, depending on how it's set up. And that eventually at some future date, the loan is paid off to zero, it's closed out and life moves on. A line of credit is more of an open-ended where you get a set threshold for your max borrowing capacity. Sometimes it's secured with just the business assets of the company. So it's your receivables, your inventory, your fixed assets. So anything that's not a piece of property that doesn't have a VIN, so any equipment, things like that. And that short-term debt is to be used for short-term needs to finance, you know, when it's Tuesday and there's no cash in the checking account because you're waiting on that receivable and payroll is Friday, you can use your line of credit for that. Because the thought process is that receivable is going to come in, you pay the line of credit down, and life moves on. So it's more there to help bridge the gaps in your cash cycle as opposed to being
borrowing against receivables. It should be tied to receivables.
Exactly. Or inventory, same thing.
Yep.
Sometimes we see borrowers that maybe if you find a good deal on a work truck or have something break down and you need to turn it quickly because it, you know, you need it to continue operations. So they'll throw a equipment purchase on the line of credit. Well, what does that do, right? It takes up that availability on that short-term debt that's financing your working capital. And then all of a sudden, when you need that short-term working capital needs, you don't have the capacity to borrow how you need to because you used it for capital purchases. So
yep.
You're kind of mixing that long-term asset with short-term borrowing when everything should kind of be structured ideally, long-term debt for long-term assets, short-term debt for short-term assets.
So that, you know, that's, you know, the kind of the line or the explanation that I've always had or given the advice, you know, perfect line of credit would be lots and lots of activity and comes down to zero once or twice per year.
Generally speaking, I mean, there are some, in some cases where you always have inventory, you always have jobs going on, but at least you see that seasonal or that regular revolving nature.
Yep.
Not a perfect example, but if you think of it kind of like a credit card, you know, mm-hmm. You don't go out and buy your car on a credit card. You know, it's kind of financing the day-to-day monthly stuff. And then at the end of the month, you pay off the credit card. So it's again, it's there to be kind of that short-term working capital need to bridge the gap between when the invoices are paid. So when you're paying for your labor, your supplies, that type of thing, and until the receivable comes in and you collect the cash.
So on the flip side of that, right, probably, you know, when you see a line of credit that's up at its max and it's been there for a year and we're just making monthly interest payments, how do you view that, right? Because quite frankly, a lot of business owners would say, well, hey, that's a cash cow for them, right? I mean, they're just constantly making money off of this thing. Do you guys look at that as a cash cow?
Well, as you started on the outset, you know, every loan has risk to it, right? So in banking terms, what we refer to that is an evergreen line of credit. So a line of credit that doesn't have that regular revolving nature where you don't see movement on a regular or seasonal basis, depending on how the company is structured. That to me, creates a lot of questions because I don't want to say it's hiding secrets, but over the past, what have we been since 2008, a couple of years here, when interest rates have been really low, capital's cheap. So you can make bad decisions and they don't cost you very much financially. Mm-hmm. Now that prime is 7.75 and probably going to be increased a couple more times this year, who knows? Those mistakes start to really cost you and be painful.
Yeah.
So that line of credit that maybe you finance losses, maybe it was capital purchases, or it was distributions, or, you know, whatever number of things that wasn't for the purpose of that short-term assets, the working capital, taking care of the cash cycle. If your line was at prime and it was only 3.25%, well, now it's more than double, right? So that starts to get painful really quickly.
Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, it causes you to fall farther and farther behind. I mean, in reality, if you're not paying down the line of credit, odds are you probably have some cash flow issues.
There's no such thing as a free lunch. That everything needs to get paid back at some point.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I look at that and going, well, in reality, because a number of years ago, it was the case where, you know, the banks were tightening that up and they go, okay, you don't need a line of credit. You need a short-term loan. And so we're going to convert that to a term loan and your payments are $5,000 a month and see your first payment next month. Do you foresee that, you know, the banking moving in that direction again as things tighten up? I mean, what does your crystal ball tell you?
I think good companies that have good relationships with their banks will manage through.
Okay.
You know, it's a lot easier to have those difficult conversations where, you know, like I said earlier, if you had one job that went bad, or you had that you messed up the costing on, or you didn't collect a receivable, or whatever number of things, there's a hiccup in the cash flow, and you have to pick up the phone and call your banker and say, things are looking light. I don't think I'm be able to make my payment this month. It's going to be painful, right? But it gets a whole lot easier to have that conversation when you have that history built. And they know
your name. The person on the other end knows your name.
Right. And you have you have that payment history for however many number of years that show that you had the capacity and the character to repay that obligation.
Sure. Okay. They might have a little bit more flexibility. So again, I'm going to go back to really the comment of the large national banks, where sometimes I don't have that personal relationship. My thought at that point is it's a little easier for them to look at you as a number and just say, you know, look at it purely from a peer balance sheet standpoint as, you know, are you good or not? You might not have as much luck there holding that major balance and just making interest payments. Would that generally be a fair statement or?
Generally speaking, yes. I mean, I'm not going to try and paint anyone in a fair or an unfair light.
Correct.
Yeah, they have things that they need to manage for. Yeah, they have their own cash flow that they need to manage. And if they start to see warning signs of potential losses on an asset, you know, they're going to take steps to mitigate that. And unfortunately, the flip side of that is,
they should.
Yeah.
Realistically, right? They're looking out for their, you know, financial success as well.
Yep. So I'd say historically, generally speaking, which general advice, generally doesn't apply to anyone. So take that with a grain of salt. But generally speaking, the smaller organizations that you have a more personal interaction with, more people in the organization are more likely to work with you through issues. Sure. if and when they do pop up.
They come up. Okay, that makes total sense. So then what about the other side? What about somebody who's got a line of credit, but they've been in a position where they haven't had to use it in a long time, right? So it's been at a zero balance for a couple of years. Is that a problem? Or should they exercise it? Should they show that there's a need there? Or is there a chance that it might be closed out on them?
You know, it's hard to say because it all depends on their banking relationship and that individual bank's methodology, right? So it'd be like if you had an open contract with a customer that they say, hey, I need you to come in and do some work sometime. I'll let you know. So you always kind of have time or resources allocated to jump in and complete that job whenever they pick up the phone. Well, sure. Those resources cost something, right?
Right. It's time you can't be spending on other jobs.
Exactly. So from a banking perspective, what they have to do is they have to have funding and capital set aside for each loan that they make. So from a banking perspective, again, funded loans are earning assets. Unfunded loans, they have to still set aside capital and funding if and when that line of credit would get drawn on. So some banks have gone to ratcheting back availability. So if you have that line of credit that you haven't used in 2 years, your banker might call you and say, you know, what availability do you think you might need? And then can we bring that balance or that availability down a little bit? Cause it costs the bank less to have it out there. Some banks have even gone to what they refer to as non-usage fees. So they charge you a percentage smaller than if you are borrowing, but they'll charge you a percentage of the availability if you don't use it.
Sure. Go ahead.
Now the interest rates have started to go back up. You don't see that as much because there's more interest income being generated. It's not as it wasn't as critical as when interest rates are low, because banks make their money on the difference between what they pay on deposits and what they charge on loans, that net interest margin. Yep. As interest rates increase, you start to see that net interest margin widen. So it's less of an issue when you're setting aside capital and resources to cover those unfunded availabilities.
Sure. Yep. So again, yeah, bottom line is it's still, even though you're not using it, it still counts against the banks, you know, as if they're lending it almost, right? It counts against their assets as if they're already lending it out.
In a sense, yes. Now, generally, if you're not borrowing on the line of credit, hopefully you have a good chunk of deposits set away that you're, you know, that's how you're funding your working capital. Yep. So if you have what they refer to as compensating balances, so if you have deposits to offset your unfunded loans, most banks aren't going to care because they're making money on those deposits, right? So it's kind of, if you have no deposits, or if you have your deposits with a different institution and only a line of credit with a different institution that you don't use, you're probably going to hear about it.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. And I'm a huge advocate of building a Hill and Valley account, right? You need to have a fund which has a minimum of 90 days worth of fixed operating expenses in the bank in a liquid form, because, you know, certainly as we experienced a number of years ago, going into the pandemic, suddenly a lot of things stopped for a lot of people, and without those funds, and that's it. But it makes sense if they're in the same bank, then they're earning on that side and won't beat you up on the other side as much. Okay. So let's actually start getting into the loans here a little bit more. So really what, so I'll set the stage this way, right? All too often, when business owners, especially guys in the field sometimes, are looking at it, and things are getting tight, and I know I got to go talk to my banker and see if we can borrow some money, right? Because things are tight. And they basically, they worked all day. They pushed it to the end of the day because I really don't want to do it anyway, right? So that by the time they go talk to the banker, they may not necessarily be the cleanest and maybe don't even smell that great at that point in the day. And they basically have a yellow legal pad, and on the yellow legal pad, they basically have written $50,000, right? That's what they need, right? And that's what they brought to that meeting with their banker. My guess is that doesn't do a lot for you, right?
it makes the discussion a whole lot more difficult. For sure.
Sure. So from the lender's perspective, what would you like to have a small business owner bring in if they want to have that discussion about borrowing money?
So if they have no borrowing relationship with the bank, you're starting off brand new. It's helpful to have a couple years of tax returns, whether that's, if the business is included on the Schedule C, your personal, you'll want to see that. If it's a separate, it's a partnership or an S corp, they'll want typically taxes for your personal and taxes for the business. And depending on where you're at in the year, generally speaking, if you're over a quarter or two into the year, they're going to want to They're going to want some type of interim reporting. So year to date, your QuickBooks, that type of thing.
Sure.
If your financial reporting is in the old shoebox that you drop off at your accountants once a year.
So I shouldn't bring my shoebox in, I'm guessing.
No, I'd leave the shoebox at home. And maybe a lot of times it's helpful if you get the accountant involved. You know, they generally have more inside knowledge on the financial workings of the business. So if you have the business owner who is very good in the trade, but needs some help on the numbers, if they have a good CPA or a good bookkeeper that can help explain what's going on and why they need the loan, why they need the financing, that helps a lot.
So let me ask this question, right? Because early on you mentioned, that phrase cash flow a number of times. And of course, there's a major difference between cash flow and accounting. My P&L can show me that I'm making money and I'm still broke because of those major differences between cash flow and accounting. And so is it helpful to have a cash flow budget or a cash flow projection in addition to the P&L to show that difference?
It can. I would say it depends, like what the bank is going to want to see depends on that particular institution. Every bank has their own set of rules of what they want. Mm-hmm. And also the size of the business and the complexity of the request, right? So if you're the business that says, we need a $25,000 line of credit, it's going to be a whole different set of financials than if you're walking in saying, I need $1 million, right? So that the bank looks at that risk from the banking standpoint differently, and they're going to require more and more complex financial reporting the greater the request.
Okay. So at that point, that might be more helpful. The larger you are, the more helpful that would be.
Okay. So as you get larger, you typically have a heightened level of financial reporting. So once you get to a certain size, there's going to be almost an expectation of that jobs and progress report. It's not going to be a nice to have. It's going to be a need to have. Different levels of financial reporting. So you can start out with tax returns compiled, which is basically an internal financial statement that you work with your CPA to go through and make the adjustments, and then they put it in their format to make sure everything kind of looks consistent from year to year. So those are compilation or compiled financials. Reviewed financials, where they come in, they actually go through the books, they do some due diligence and to make sure that things are being reported as they should be. And then finally, an audit, which is the highest level, where your CPA firm comes in, spend a number of weeks on site, and they're assuring whoever looks at that financial report that is what happened. Exactly. Now, that, as you can imagine, when you start talking about people coming on site and logging hours or weeks or months into a process, that's going to cost.
And that continuum that you listed, again, I would say starts out with the smallest company, and as you get bigger would require, as that loan amount goes up, is going to require more and more.
It does. But also I would offer that as the company grows in size and complexity, there may be a need or a requirement for that as well. Not even from the banking standpoint, but a lot of times if you start getting engaged in government contracts, they require audit.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. So how important is it then for a company to have, from the lending perspective, let's qualify it or pre-qualify it with that, from a lending perspective, to have a business plan in place?
I would say if you're just starting out or if you're embarking on a substantial expansion, it's very helpful. There are also kind of specialty financing programs offered through the SBA or the Small Business Administration, where those loans are guaranteed by the federal government to protect the bank in the event of a loss. They're generally earmarked toward the riskier loans that, you know, it's the startups, it's the large expansions where there's not the hard collateral to back the loans. Mm-hmm. In those instances, business plans are required for that particular loan program. But if you walk in and say, hey, I got this great idea, I'm going to start a company, you want to lend me $100,000 to do it? Say, okay, what are you going to do with the money? Like, how am I going to get paid back? Right. So it helps if you're not already an established business that has a track record that you can point to and say, look what I've done the last 3 years. If you're starting out fresh, or maybe you're buying another company or expanding into a division that you haven't done before, having that business plan helps tell the story on why the bank should make the loan.
So, okay. Then the other, let's dovetail in with that a little bit, right? Because you said one of the things they want to know is, are you going to be able to pay the money back? Right? Do you have that ability? Really? So that speaks to cash flow. You know, do you have that cash flow ability to do it? So that's where I've worked with companies and I've said, okay, you know, you're in tough shape right now. If you could get a loan, kind of restructure some of the bills that you have, lower your overall monthly payment, improve your cash flow, right? And be able to show that in a cash flow statement, current versus what it could look like. I would imagine that would be helpful.
It is. So, you know,
let me put it this way, right? So, if I can't, let me throw this in there, because one of the things is you want to know, you know, how can, you know, am I going to get paid back? But along with that, I have to think there's an element of, do you know why you're in the, you know, so we're not talking now for a new business. We're talking for an established business. Do you know why you're in this position today? Right. I'm not expanding. I'm just trying to survive. And if I don't know how I got here, and I give you $50,000 as a lender, well, quite honestly, what's to say a year from now, you're not going to be back in here looking for another $50,000 because you don't know how you got here to begin with.
Well, and hopefully you made it that year, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, just from a personal budget, every dollar should have a purpose. So every mm-hmm. dollar that comes in, you got to give it a job to do. Otherwise it's lazy capital sitting around. So,
and that purpose isn't necessarily the new boat.
Well, right, exactly. So, as a business owner, you know, I don't have to be the one to impress on anybody. Like I've had business owners in my family. My father was a business owner for many years. You know, there's a great stress and weight that business owners take on being responsible for everyone on their team. So it behooves them to make sure that business is going to be, they're doing everything they can to make sure that business is going to be around for the foreseeable future, because there's people counting on them just as much as they are counting, their families are counting on them. So having that budget, and again, going back and saying like all these financial reporting things that your bank's going to require of you, how do you know where you're going if you don't know where you came from? Mm-hmm. Right. So having a budget, just like a family budget, if you don't have a plan, your money's going to find a way to leave. Right. It just does. Like costs come up or opportunities come up that, oh, I can't, finally found this piece of equipment that I've been looking for and I don't need it right now, but you know, maybe I will in the future and it's a good deal. Got to buy it. Well, that's great if you have that earmarked and in the budget, but if you don't, those great deals and those great opportunities can spell disaster in the future, where you have capital that's sitting around not being used, generating profits for the company.
Quite frankly, that happens. You know, all of a sudden that good deal turns into an anchor on your neck, doesn't it? Right,
more often than not, unfortunately.
You know, and quite honestly, there's a lot of contractors that I think run into that because I needed a backhoe for a job. So I went out and rented a backhoe, right, and returned it.
pay the rent on it. Next week, I got another job. I rent the backhoe again. And the week after that, I got another job. I rent the backhoe. Well, pretty soon the contractor is going, I should just buy a backhoe. Of course, it's not just the backhoe. Now I need a trailer for the backhoe, and I need a bigger truck to pull the trailer with the backhoe. And suddenly, I mean, you could have rented that backhoe for a long time, right?
Well, and the upside of renting that backhoe is if and when things do turn, that's the rental place's problem, that they have that backhoe sitting there, that it's not being used. It hurts to make that loan payment every month on an asset that's not making you any money.
Right. And if when you look at it that way, right, then suddenly that loan payment looks a little bit different. At least if it's a van when I run service calls, well, okay, I can kind of justify that. But to drive past the backhoe every day with my van as I'm going to a service call, that's sitting there doing nothing. That makes a good point. In a nutshell, if there were certain items that you would say, I'm an existing business, I'm coming in, I'm going to talk to my lender because I need some money. What are some of those items? If we can give a list of what should I be prepared to bring in? Maybe we'll kind of cap things there a little bit.
Yeah. So if you don't already have a borrowing relationship set up with that lender, typically if you have an existing borrowing relationship, they're going to be asking your financial statements on a regular basis. So you'll probably get a letter in the mail around April, May every year saying, hey, could you send us your tax returns for the business, your personal and a personal financial statement. Mm-hmm. Just about every bank does it if you have an open loan. We'll kind of start there. So if they have your year-end financial statement information, and say you're past that tax return time, so you're halfway through the year and you have a hiccup, maybe you need to ask for a new line of credit, increase your existing line of credit, because you're having cash flow issues. It's helpful to explain to the bank why and not just what. So the what is, I need the loan because I need cash to fund operations. Well, like you were saying before, how did you get here? What happened? Was it a job that went bad where you didn't get paid? Did you not price it appropriately? Did you use the availability on the line of credit for that good deal that you couldn't pass up on that backhoe? And now you're out of working capital space. So being able to tell the story on how you got to this point, why what happened. Because maybe it's as simple as you bought too much capital equipment with your line of credit, and then you can peel that off into a five-year loan, and then it frees up capital on the line of credit.
Sure.
And it gives you a regular, consistent monthly payment to pay off the debt in a reasonable time frame. Because you always want to match, ideally, you want to match your debt with the life of your asset. Mm-hmm. So you don't necessarily want to pay for a capital asset with your line of credit that, you're saying before, you want to have that regularly revolve and ideally pay down every year. If you have the cash flow to do it, the operating cash flow to do it, and you can pay for your CapEx or your capital expenditures out of cash, that's great. Because then you have that free and clear asset that helps build up your balance sheet, build up your net worth. But ideally, if you don't have that cash up front to pay for it, match it with the life of the asset. Over my career, I've seen a couple times where you get into a sticky situation where you have a five-year loan that the asset was depreciated over 4 years. But it was, well, excuse me, the asset was depreciated over 3 years, but it was traded in every four. Mm-hmm. So what happened, right? So you had no basis. So you owed taxes on the gain on the sale of the asset or the trade of the asset, and you still had a loan balance to pay off. So it's like you're going into
roll that back over into the next loan.
Yeah, you're going into like negative equity on each purchase. So matching that, the life of the asset to the length of the loan is very important.
Anything else? Okay, so understanding why and being able to tell why I need this loan, right? Yep. You already said, talking about, you know, making sure if we don't have the, if the bank doesn't have my current taxes and financials, be prepared to give that. And then from there, is it all kind of just driven off of that relationship that you have with the bank and their your local branches or local banks' requirements in terms of what they're going to need?
A lot of times, yes. You know, if you have the financial information that shows the cash flow performance that you're going to be able to repay the loan, it's not really that big of a deal or big of a question. It's needing that relationship when things don't go as smoothly, and you need to be able to tell that story of, you know, that job went bad, cash flow's tight, you need to increase the line of credit, but you got a receivable coming due and everything's going to match up and it'll work out. When you have that relationship to lean back on, that you've said this before and it's happened and it's worked out, that helps a lot.
Sure. Yep. Okay. Got it. One of the things that does come up. So, as we started a little bit earlier, one of the things that you said the bank tends to look at a little bit more is EBITDA. So can you talk about that a little bit, right? Because that's one of those terms that, you know, if you're in the lending side, you're comfortable with it. Some larger companies are certainly comfortable with it, but there's a lot of people who, you know, think you're talking a foreign language. You know, so what is EBITDA?
Yep. Every industry has its own terms and jargon, and it's like its own unique language. And right. Unfortunately, in banking, acronyms they're just everywhere. Right. So EBITDA is your interest before earnings, depreciation, taxes, and amortization. So to get there, you start out with your net income. So that bottom line on your P&L, you would add back depreciation and amortization. So kind of that non-cash expenses, where it's a line item to write down the value of your assets over their useful life.
And chances are your accountant's helping you with that.
Exactly. Your accountant should be helping you with that. The interest expense that you paid, it is a cash cost, but it's going to factor back into that cash available for debt service that the bank is going to use to calculate on for every dollar of cash available, how many dollars were there to pay the dollars of debt that were that were due during that period.
Okay.
So once you get that number, you compare that to your loan payments for the period. And if you're over one, things are good. That means you had more dollars of cash flow, more dollars of profitability than you had to pay out in loan payments.
Yep. And if you're less than one, how much
of less than
intense, yeah, right? Because that means that we've had more payments, which is probably why I'm talking to you to begin with.
Right. And I will say, generally, banks like to see not just a one-to-one. So it's not just every dollar of cash that was available went to pay debt. A lot of times they want to see at least 125, or for every dollar of debt that had to be paid, there was an extra 25 cents as kind of an additional cushion. Sure. That would be there in the event that you had some of these hiccups. So in the event that we're less than one, like you mentioned, the cash had to come from somewhere, right? So if you weren't late on payments, if all the payments were made as they were on time, where did the cash come from? Sometimes, unfortunately, you can see it funded on the line of credit. That's where not having that budget, not having the regular financial reporting, whether it's a jobs in progress report, whether it's a monthly P&L, where you're looking and reviewing, okay, here's what budget was, here's where we came in for the month, where are we going to make up the difference? It can be easy to say, we need to make payroll on Friday, draw on the line of credit to do it. And the bills get paid, but then you're financing losses on your line of credit, as opposed to funding assets like your inventory and your receivables. Go ahead.
Well, another area where that happens, I think, a lot. In fact, I was working with a contractor last week that they were at a loss, right? So they've got a negative EBITDA, and they, in December, the owner of the company put $30,000 back into the company, and in January, the owner put another $20,000 in, right? So that's an example of negative earnings. Where's the money coming from? Well, the owner is having to put personal funds back into the company just to keep this thing floating.
Yes. And, that helps to make payments and make them on time. But a lot of times the banks are still going to ask why. So right. If, yes, you made your payments, you always made it on time, you've never had an issue doing that. But at some point, the funds run out. So personal right. assets, if you don't fix the problem, if you don't fix the hole in the dam, eventually the water is going to come through.
So that again comes back to that same question, right? Why am I here?
Exactly.
Right? How did I get to this point? Do I understand that? And what have I done to fix it?
Exactly.
Right? Because otherwise I'm never going to be able to pay for the money or pay for that loan that I'm asking for. Well, this was an interesting discussion. It's amazing how fast time flies. We're pushing 50 minutes already here in just this quick discussion. So, on behalf of your industry, any last thoughts or comments that you would throw toward these our listeners today? That's a wide open question that I just threw at you.
It sure is, and can't possibly get me into any trouble at all.
Right.
talking on behalf of an entire industry, I would say, banks want you to succeed. Like I said before, banks are not. We're not out there to be the bad guy. We're not real estate holding companies. We're not asset liquidation companies. At the end of the day, banks want to make good loans. Collect interest, get paid for their capital and their risk allocation, and provide funding for you to operate your business and buy assets and continue to grow the economy. One of the nice things about community banks, being in your hometown, where you see them out at the grocery store and the Little League field and all that good stuff, is they get to cheer on your successes with you.
Sure.
When you do well, the bank does well, the economy does well, our communities do well. It's not something where we're trying to make it too onerous, where you can't operate your business. A lot of times, unfortunately, over the years of my career, which is a lot shorter than some, but longer than others, the times where we see businesses get into issues is maybe when the bank didn't say no when they should have. So when you went around and you found a bank that would give you that loan, that would increase that line of credit, instead of really pushing back and saying, well, why do you need it? Is this really the best thing for your business at this point in time? And at the end of the day, banks are lenders of capital, right? So we're not partners. We don't have a vested interest in your company, but it can be helpful for the bank to push back and say, well, get me that jobs in progress report. And all of a sudden you go through all that work and work with your accountant and, spend the money to do it. But then you get to see, okay,
and
in this
find a problem there, right?
Yeah. In this division, we're doing really well. And this is the team, or this is the one job that's really causing all of our headache. So sometimes when the bank can push back, or a good CPA will help you with that too. Sometimes when you get told no, it makes you better for it.
Right. No question about it. Well, Carl, this has been a lot of fun. It's been an interesting conversation. Really appreciate your being here.
Appreciate the time.
You bet.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com
or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.